You're listening to the CD Baby.
CD Baby.
CD Baby.
DIY.
Musician. Hey there, and welcome to episode number 116 of the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast. My name is Kevin, and for this roundtable edition, I have joining me Chris and the Bolt.
Yay!
Chris is finally back with us.
But in my absence, you guys only recorded like half an episode, so I didn't really miss that much.
Because we couldn't do it without you. We tried many times and forgot components of the recording equipment, and then we actually recorded an entire episode and just never posted it. It wasn't very inspired, but it just, you know, didn't have you here.
Yeah, I know.
I'm
the secret sauce.
You are.
Yeah, it's, we can't do it without the secret sauce.
It's been 4 years since we've been podcasting here at CD Baby, believe it or not. Actually, the 4.5 now. And we finally made our first purchase of equipment, actual studio gear that CD Baby will own, and we bought one mic cable today.
Yep. Because the microphones we're talking on and this mic stands are all your personal property.
Yes, they're all my personal property.
And the Bolt and I went today to Best Buy to get an XLR cable. It's our first official purchase for the podcast.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. So, went on the CD Baby card.
Wow.
Wow. That's exciting. So we're on our way now, boys.
We also take equipment donations if you guys have other mic cords or
that's true.
Microphones you want
to
send us.
Well, I have to say, the times we have forgotten equipment to record, I've been disappointed with the employees here for not having something in their car.
I know, with all the musicians that work here, you'd think somebody would have like a microphone or a mixing board or something.
Apparently not. So yeah,
maybe Sweetwater can sponsor us if anyone's listening.
They do have something on our website. Maybe I can work out a deal. All right. Well, we've got some news that we're going to discuss, and then we're going to be discussing a hot topic on the blog right now, which is how much you should get paid for your performances.
Oh, we're not talking about Hot Topic.
Hot Topic? Is Hot Topic even still around?
I think so. Isn't there the Hot Topic, the head shop in the malls? They're still around.
Oh, okay.
It's where you buy concert shirts for concerts or artist shirts for shows you didn't
go to. But what we're really talking about is how much to charge for your performances.
Yes, yes. And it is, the comments are flying on the DIY Musician blog, so we thought we'd discuss here and make for a good discussion. So we'll get to that, but first let's get into some news.
CD Baby.
CD Baby.
Music.
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 News.
Well, we'll start with some CD Baby news. Today, CD Baby announced a simplified pay structure that now gives artists the highest payout on MP3 download purchases over any other digital music retail site. Now CD Baby pays 75% of all digital downloads. The change mainly affects single song downloads, where artists now make 74 cents per a 99 cent download. That's 10 cents more than what you would make off the same single song download through iTunes. With the old pay structure, it ended up you got about 70 cents for a single song download, but we simplified it so you make more money. YouTube has added a merch store, a new feature that can be added to YouTube partner channels to offer direct-to-fan sale of merchandise, digital download, concert tickets, and more. Powering the new feature at launch are Topspin for merchandise and concert tickets, Songkick for concerts, and iTunes and Amazon for downloads. No word yet on whether or not they will roll this out to all YouTube users or when they'll be adding new partners, but we're definitely looking into it at CD Baby. Spotify has been in the U.S. for a few months now and has been well received by U.S. music consumers, but there is growing concern that the new streaming service is having a big negative effect on the artist community, especially independent artists. There are still plenty of mainstream artist holdouts, but there's a growing number of independent labels that are pulling their catalog. So we thought this was an interesting discussion piece. What do you think? Is Spotify bad for independent artists? Have you seen a dip in your music sales since Spotify came to the U.S.? Google Plus has finally created pages for businesses and brands, so you can now go claim a page for your band. Even if you don't use Google Plus, it's probably worth your while to go and claim your page now before someone else does, or another band with the same name claims it. So go get your Google Plus page now. So Spotify. So that's the news.
The answer is yes.
The answer is yes.
To Spotify. I looked at my CD Baby sales report in the accounting section of my CD Baby account about a month or two ago. And, you know, for years, it was pretty steady CD sales and, you know, decent download sales. Then over maybe 3 years ago, it shifted more towards iTunes. There was a lot of iTunes sales, less CD sales. Then I just noticed a couple months ago, because I don't check these all the time, unlike some people, I'm not checking every day. It was all Spotify. Hardly any CD sales, hardly any downloads, but hundreds and hundreds of people are listening on Spotify, which is great, except for the fact that I get paid like 36 cents at the end of it.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that have been reporting similar stories, and I can say that I've noticed that trend in certain places, but I'm curious to see, one, if the artist community will have a backlash against streaming. This is the first streaming service in America, for those of you listening outside the US, that's really been like where you can just listen to whatever you want, that's been widely accepted and doesn't cost anything. Where Grooveshark exists, but they're not as well known and there's some issues with Grooveshark, but Spotify is the first like legit free streaming service. I mean, there's Pandora, but Pandora, you can't select what you want
to
play.
Yeah, Pandora sort of, it exposes you to music, but you can't just listen to the same song over and over again or listen to the album you want.
Yeah.
I actually had kind of a whiplash effect. Actually, I was listening to Spotify a lot when it first came to the States. When was that, like July or sometime in the summer? I was listening nonstop. I loved it. I still love it, actually. I still listen occasionally. But once I realized, I saw my royalty report and saw how little I was getting paid, I went all the way back to like 1998, and I've been buying CDs again for the last couple months.
Really?
Yeah. It was like I had this weird gut reaction to just go back to like, I don't know, the way I know that people will get money.
I mean, then the interesting thing about buying CDs is that at this point, they pretty much cost the same as a download, but it's like buying your own personal backup. It's not in the cloud, it's on your bookshelf,
right?
You know, yeah. I mean, because if you can rip it to your computer and put it on your iPod and have it the same way as any other music, but you have a solid physical backup with the artwork and everything, like, to put on your shelf, I mean, it's really, you know, in a way I can see people being like, oh, like CDs, they're more reliable.
Well, the interesting thing with Spotify is I was using it pretty regularly and then kind of stopped when they were forcing you to integrate with Facebook. I had already gotten an account before they did that. I believe now if you sign up with Spotify, they force you to integrate.
If you have a new account,
you have to.
We can still use our old accounts without it.
Yeah. And and I don't like the fact that they're automatically broadcasting everything I'm listening to on Spotify.
What on Facebook, you mean?
On Facebook, yeah.
Yeah, because what if your friend called you and was like, hey, do you want to go out and get drinks? And you're like, I really don't like this guy. I'm going to say that I am getting my car fixed or something, or going on a hike in the forest. And then he's on Facebook and he's like, wait, why are you listening to Tears for Fears?
Yeah. Yeah. Or like you tell your girlfriend that you're going, you know, to to class or to, you're working late and you're listening to Barry White. And she's like, wait a minute.
Yeah. Yeah, so I mean, I don't like the idea of, you know, the whole privacy thing. I don't usually get hung up on that, but it's like, I don't want everything that, you know, that I'm listening through on Spotify being automatically broadcast. You can turn that feature off, but it's like, it's the standard feature.
Hidden in some security.
And I don't even, you know, trust that they're not broadcasting it because, you know, they want, that's the thing. It's like, I still use it, but I haven't been using it as much. So it'd be interesting to see if the artists have a backlash against that. Moving on to some of the other news items, the CD Baby thing. I'm glad we finally did this. We simplified the payout. You make more money now, and it actually makes it easy for us to sing the praises of selling music through CD Baby. That was the hard thing. It was like, well, if you sell it for this, you make X amount, but if you sell it for this, you get that. Because it was right. Like, for single songs, we took a little bit more to cover the transaction fee, but we're just across the board paying 75% no matter
what. So it simplifies things and makes accounting easier for artists, and they get paid a little bit more money, and it puts us in the position of being the one music retail space that pays musicians the most.
That's right, where there's actual retail customers looking for music.
Yeah.
So make sure your music's there. Moving on.
Oh, wait, before we move on, while we're singing the praises of our own company, have we talked about submission credits?
No, we haven't. We've actually launched a few things since last... I can't remember if...
Nonstop product rollout.
We launched a music store for Facebook, so if you're on CD Baby... You can sell your music from Facebook now, so go into your account and hook that up.
That's
super great.
Same percentage. So you sell on Facebook and you're still getting the best percentage around.
And it's better than stores that make you check out through Facebook, because if you have to check out through Facebook, Facebook takes more money.
Mm.
And we have submission credits.
Mm-hmm.
That have been a kind of a sleeper hit.
Yeah.
So this is like, if I have more than one album and I want to sell it, I get a discount?
Yeah. If you've got, like, you know, believe it or not, we've had like labels and people buying like 50 album submission credits. And
you don't have to use them right away.
No.
You could save them for subsequent
releases. Yeah, so if you got a couple releases coming up, you can buy credits ahead of time and... save, you get a discount, and
It's like you can save up to like 40% or
yeah, like this around that, yeah,
around 40%.
Yeah, so that's been cool. Yeah, I've had a lot of cool things going on. That's partly why we've been too busy to podcast, because
we've had a lot going on.
The three of us are a big part of the team that has to do all this, not the programming, we don't know anything about programming, but we have to release it,
right? We're the marketers.
All right, well, let's move on to the discussion. And we've noticed a trend on the DIY Musician blog anytime we talk about getting paid for shows, those seem to be performing.
Yeah,
those articles seem to get a lot of comments.
Yeah, like in the past 6 months, I wrote an article called Three Ways to Tell You're Getting Ripped Off by a Booker. And within like a week, we had 300 or 400 comments on that. And then... there was a similar article about whether musicians' unions can really do much to help increase wages for live performances, and that blew up. And then this week or last week, we posted one called, what was it called? 4 Lessons on How Much to Charge for Your Performance. And it's blowing up.
Yeah.
And this is like, people are sharing it on Facebook and Twitter, and they're leaving tons of comments in the blog section. So if you do check out the article, you can also join in on the conversation.
So what are the main lessons to start off the conversation?
Basically, it was written by a guest contributor. We didn't write it, but it was a guy named David Roth. He plays in a band called Mighty Groove in Boston.
Oh, I thought it was David Lee Roth.
It might be. Maybe this is his new band. Diamond Dave wrote an article for us.
Diamond Dave?
Anyways.
He's got some free time.
Yeah, the main point is you have to know what you're worth, so be aware of what's going on kind of in the marketplace, in your town, with similar bands. But once you determine what you're worth, you got to ask for it. You got to negotiate for that, because if you just have this mentality of, oh, I'll take what they can give me, then you're always going to stay there. Basically, like that mentality of, what he says, you will only ever get what you think you are worth. No one's ever going to pay you more.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that was the main thrust. I mean, he has obviously a little more details and tips and stuff like that, but that's the main thrust of his argument.
But lots of comments. So what's making everyone...
Now, people are upset.
Are they upset? Are they
in love?
I skimmed through some of the comments, and I know that one person I saw said, if I said, you know, asked for $200 from a club booker in my town, they'd laugh at me.
That's one of the comments I highlighted to say, and that was by a guy named Big Thumper.
Big Thumper.
Yep. Now, Big Thumper says, I'm sorry, but that's not how it works here. If you want to play a club here, you take what they pay. If you ask for more, not only will you not get it, but they'll hire one of the other 200 bands fighting for gigs in the few venues that feature live music here. So I don't know what town he's in, but I'm sure that...
That was somebody different than the one I saw. They just said, if I ask for $200, they'll laugh at me.
Oh, okay. There's been many people like that. Another guy said, a guy named Mark Nanny said, yes, I think this article was at least a little out of touch. You can only get paid what the market will bear. At this point in history, no one has extra money, and getting paid at all for what is a luxury item takes really being worth the money.
See, I kind of disagree with the generalization of those comments, because I've seen it here in Portland, you know, which isn't, it's a growing music town, but as far as like having a big industry, it's not here. It's not like LA where these big clubs that are always packed out and, you know, more money to go around.
Mm-hmm.
It's a smaller scene and the clubs don't have as much cash, but we've still been able to work it where get paid and to earn the right to get paid. I don't think you have to feel like you're never going to get paid.
Well, now, should you establish, you know, I mean, the article talks about sort of figuring out what you're worth. How do you figure that out? Do you figure out by your draw, or is there something that you offer more than your draw? Like when you play with another band, or like, or you play in a venue, are you entertaining the people who would normally be there already to the point that they're buying more drinks and stay longer, you know, like, or do you just think of it in terms of the people that you bring to the club, your fans?
Well, I personally have a hard time conceiving of clubs anymore that actually have built-in audiences. I feel like everyone is expected to bring their own draw, and if you don't do it, there won't be anyone there.
Yeah, I agree. So I think the draw is a big thing. I mean, look, I mean, we know that every club, if you're going to ask for money, they're going to ask how many people you're going to bring to the table. So, I mean, it starts there. I mean, you got to get people out to your shows. If you're packing out the club and they're still not paying you anything, then that's definitely the point where you're not negotiating properly and that you don't obviously think you're worth anything. I mean, if they're not paying, just because they've never done it a certain way, I could see in small towns that maybe never get national touring acts kind of going, well, we always do it this way. Well, you have some leverage. I mean, they want their place packed.
Right.
Get creative and say, well, look, let's do it this way. We'll make more money. We'll pack out the place. You get what you want. We get what we want.
And
throwing it out, I mean, sometimes these people have just always done it a certain way. They don't necessarily think about it another way, you know.
I mean, if there are only a couple venues in your town where you can play, and you know you can double the audience on any given night, you know, go down there on a night, talk to the booker, be like, look, there are 25 people in here tonight. We're playing on Friday, see how many people are in here, you know, or we're playing on Tuesday or whatever. Like, I mean, it should be simple economics.
Well, that is somewhat related to another strand of in this discussion where a lot of people are kind of angry. It brings up an anger in people when they think, well, I'm a really good musician, like our band's great, so we don't bring a lot of people out, but we will if you give us a chance, whereas the crappy hobbyist band down the street is packing the place out because they're really cool guys and they're bringing all their friends.
Yeah.
And so one comment I thought was interesting, this guy Jake Pegg said, across most of the U.S., clubs tend to be based on quantity of customers rather than quality of music. For this reason, they're substantially less likely to invest or assume any financial risk. They'll book any band as long as they bring enough friends to buy beer. And that seems totally true. Like,
yeah.
So what do the career guys do when they get older and they've got this like repertoire of skills that they've built over their lifetime, but it's not as valuable to the clubs?
You know, I mean, there are discerning clubs. And, you know, not every town has discerning clubs that, like, try to book quality music, you know, that they know that people will be super into, and that the crowds are based on more than just friends. And those are the sort of clubs that, you know, hopefully they pay enough to build good relationships with those bands, and that's not always the case in all, you know, in all towns. And but there are those venues, and there's, you know, plenty of those venues here in Portland. Some of them have failed and some of them have succeeded. But I think that some bookers understand, like, you build a good relationship with good bands and you're discerning and you pay well and you can create an environment where everybody is, you know, satisfied. It just sometimes seems like that doesn't happen very often because there is such a glut in the market.
Well, and, you know, if you're at just bar X that just wants to have a bunch of people there to drink beer, they're never going to see it that way. You know, it's going to be hard for them. Or, I don't know, if you're limited with the venues in your town, I mean, what's going to benefit you most is just to get to know those venue owners as much as you can and be involved with the music scene there. Looking at the article, though, I know part of what he's talking about is events, like special events, like, you know, a lot of cities have in the summer where they have music playing. Hello Morning played, there's two that I think of. We played an Oyster Festival.
Oh, yeah.
I think that was our highest paying gig.
Highest paying, lowest attendance, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And we also played something that's, what's that food one?
The Bite of Oregon,
yeah. And those things were more open where it's like the person putting on the event doesn't really know, they just have a budget. They don't really know bands necessarily. They probably, you know, in both those instances, they got our name from somebody who recommended us. And they just have a budget and they're, you know, asking price, and in that case, they're
not so much interested in draw.
No. And I think that's where you kind of have to go with what the event might dictate. I mean, like in those cases, you can ask for a lot more money. The Oyster Fest one that we did, I think we got $1,500. It was a total last minute thing. Like they asked us like 2 weeks before and, you know, we just played for 45 minutes to nobody and we got paid cash.
That's like you're providing a service in that event.
Yeah, right? Yeah. I mean, that's what it is. I mean, because the funny thing was with that is they had done the event for the first time the year before and they put a lot of planning and effort into it and it was well attended. They did this event again. They just totally decided to redo it again, total last minute. And so they, you know, got entertainment like they did before because there was bands all throughout the day and there was like a jazz combo that was playing before us, you know, jazz combo opening up for a rock band. It's always
sweet.
Good. And so and those guys probably were just, you know, guys that play around town all the time and probably got their fee. And so I think in those instances, that's where you got to think a little bit more about, you know, what am I worth to what this person's doing? You know, this is a bigger event. It's worth more than $100 to them. So don't lowball yourself just because you're used to playing at a club that's, you know, just wants people there to drink beer.
There's a whole bunch of different considerations you can make when you're trying to determine what you're worth. And another commenter, Colorado Swing, basically brought up the fact that you can't apply one fee or one assessment of your worth because you could be doing a wedding gig, you could be doing like an event like the Oyster Fest, you could be playing for 45 minutes in a bar, you could have to drive 5 hours. Like all these different things come into play. And obviously what a wedding band that knows 4 hours of really popular tunes, you're going to pay that band more than you would pay someone to play their own music that you've never heard for 45 minutes and maybe it's good and maybe, you know, like, so it's tough to assess, I guess.
Well, one of the things that you would do, like, in I mean, music's a little bit different because the way people treat it and how it's not always your main source of income, but with like a business, is you decide, you realize that, especially if you're like freelancing, doing like web design or something like that, you know that there's people who, some people can only pay $200 for a website, some people can, who, you know, expect to pay $5,000 for a website, and you can sort of, you know, you can play to everybody, but eventually it's in your best interest just to play to the people who are willing to pay $5,000, you know? So like you could eliminate, you know, the lower paying gigs. If there was enough business, you could say, hey, my price is this, and I'm just not going to take all these other gigs. You know, I'm just going to concentrate on the higher paying ones. But it seems like, whereas in, you know, other lines of work that aren't as saturated, there's probably more opportunity to do that, you know, to cut out certain kinds of gigs and just do the more lucrative ones. But
yeah, and I think one important point on that article, it says research what your competitors are charging. I think a lot of artists just assume that maybe nobody's getting paid, and they may find out that there are bands that are getting paid more than they are, and their draw is the same, and you're like, well, wait a minute, and you might find out that it's just because they asked and you didn't.
I've been in that situation before at a club here. I've played a, you know, sort of a similar night to a similar amount of a crowd, and realized that there are bands that I knew that were getting paid way more than me, and then I've played that same kind of show and heard from other people that they weren't getting paid anything. So it's like, yeah, I don't know what the difference is, except maybe just asking. Maybe that's all it is. And being willing to say no, like this guy Jake Pegg that I mentioned before. One of his tips, he says, saying no to lousy gigs is liberating, empowering, valuable, and underrated. Try it. It's incredible. Lose a mediocre gig just because you asked for a guarantee. That's your gain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would agree. That's why Hell and Morning hasn't played in a little while.
Wait, if the money's right, you get the band back together? And
Sure. Why not? Yeah, we just hadn't played. We did a string of shows that was like a lot of work to get there and promote, and they were just mediocre. And we had one instance where somebody stiffed us on paying us, and then just some others that was like didn't pay what it was worth for our time to go out and do. So it was like they weren't gigs where we felt like they were advancing our musical career. So why do them?
Now, I'm probably one of these people that more professional musicians get mad at, because half the time I don't even think about the money until someone like sticks some cash in my shirt pocket at the end of the gig, and I just say thanks, and I don't count it till
you count it when you're in the car.
Till I get home, right. Yeah. But because it is a hobby, and because the focus for me is more to share music with my friends and the community and stuff like that, that I, at least at this point, am not, you know, bargaining with people, not trying to get the most out of every show we play as far as money goes. Now, I could see how being a band like mine could sort of hurt other bands who are trying to be a little more serious about it, and they're like, and especially since we don't play that often, when we do play we bring out all of our friends because they haven't seen us play in 3 months, so we bring a pretty good crowd and you know, a lot of times the bookers are like, whoa, you guys are cool, like you should come back and play next week, and I'm like, we play next week.
Like, whoa, you just packed our place out and you played pretty much for free.
We like this arrangement. Yeah, we do nothing and make money, you do everything.
But yeah, when they asked us to come back next week, I'm like, you don't understand, if we play next week no one will be here.
But there'll be another band to play next week that has the same situation as you,
right.
And there'll be 5,000 more bands in the town that all play once every 3 months and make nothing and bring their friends out. So what do you do in this situation?
Boycott.
What's the end? Boycott music?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
You play, but you tell all your friends to go get drinks at the place across the street.
Hurting everyone.
Hurting everyone.
That's the only way to solve this.
Maybe you should just sell drinks at your shows.
Sell your own drinks?
Sell your own drinks.
Yeah, at the merch table. Open and bring a little cooler.
One of the recurring jokes that was coming up in this in the comments section of this blog post, I think like 10 different people said it was exposure. You either get the club say, oh, this will be good for exposure. So, you know, everyone was saying, haha, exposure is either, you know, you die from cold or it's, you know, you something you get arrested for.
Yeah. That's funny.
I mean, another thing you can do is you can rent a hall. And sometimes if you have a big crowd, I mean, if you know you can bring in the audience, you can sell the beer and you can sell snacks. You can sell whatever else you want and you can make a really nice profit.
Mm-hmm. I always think that's what people should do in smaller towns. People, you know, smaller towns, people are like, oh, we just don't have any performance options, you know, there's only one club and every night like the famous bands are playing there. It's like, well, rent an American Legion or a library or wherever you can get, you know, if you have a friend that owns a shop.
Yeah,
throw your
we did that once. We rented a Grange Hall, I think that's what.
Yeah, well, yeah, I did that before.
It didn't it It didn't go so well.
No?
We about broke even. It was poorly attended. And see, the situation was, we were trying to do a show. This was a previous band. We live in the Portland area, but I actually live across the river in Southwest Washington. So we were trying to do a show over there, and we found this Grange Hall, and it was kind of, it was on a main road, but it, you know, it was just nobody recognized it as a venue, and it was cheap rent, and the room was decent, and it just hardly anybody came, and so it was kind of disappointing. But we didn't lose money, but we just kind of broke even. So,
and probably more effort to get your own PA.
Yeah, because we had to rent lights and PA, and stuff. And then, you know, so.
But if you could pull it off,
there's some venues out there that are cheap. You know, things that you can get, and if you've got the following, it could be worth your while.
Otherwise, boycott music.
Boycott music.
You heard it here first.
That's right. Boycott music. Stop playing. Stop doing it. Just no. No, no, no. Don't do that.
Were there any other interesting comments?
Oh, tons. But, you know, I think I probably hit on the main points.
Well, if you listening out there have a comment or a strategy that you take for... trying to get the most money for your performances, or how you figure out how you get paid for your performances, we'd love to hear it. You can call us. Now, write this number down. It's different than what's on the website. That service stopped working for some reason, and we can't seem to get our website updated.
I was working on it today, but I'm still struggling.
Yeah.
Someone stopped paying the phone bill.
You know, something
and
happened.
The internet bill, apparently.
Yeah, apparently. But we go into WordPress to update it, and the whole options are not there. So we're working on it. But the number is 360-524-2209. I'll say it again. We'll put it in the post, too, on the podcast website at cdbabypodcast.com. But it's 360-524-2209. And you can call that and leave a message. I'm not sure what the message says there. It's my Google mailbox, Google Voice mailbox. So leave your message. Let us know what you think, what your strategy is for getting money for your performances, or any horror stories you've had and whatnot, or successes. Share your successes.
Tell us when you got overpaid for your gig.
Yeah, when does that ever happen? Boys, you know what? End of the night, there's an extra 100 laying here, so I'm just going to give it on to you. So yeah, let us know. Call that number, or you can email us at info@cdbabypodcast.com. And we'll start getting these back in rotation. And I didn't have a call today.
No calls.
No calls.
All right.
I know that line being down and us having the wrong number has hurt
cut
us.
Down on our calls,
and as well as the fact that there's no episodes.
Yeah, no new episodes.
Well, so, but anyway, call that number. You can email us, and so we're back, baby. We're making episodes again.
Didn't we say that last time?
Yeah, we said it every time, but it doesn't.
Whenever we're back.
We're back. That's right. So anyway.
You've been listening to the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast, broadcasting from Portland, Oregon, USA.